for the 18th Judicial District, as well as he has thrown his hat
fine since the rep.
Okay.
But I just figured I'd say it now in case she's listening.
Okay, there you go. So, hey, we've got a big show planned here today. And before I tell you my little experience, we have George Brockler in studio with us. Many of you know him. He's the district attorney for the 18th Judicial District, as well as he has thrown his hat in the ring for governor. So we're going to ask him some questions. He's going to give us some answers. So, George, welcome. Thanks for being here with us.
It is great to be on here. And Thank you for having me on, both of you. Love the story. I can't wait to hear your story on air, how you're going to, what trapped you in your home. And I think any measure of a successful Independence Day is also, do you have all your digits? Yeah. I do. All my kids do. Feels like everything was successful.
I know. Definitely. Definitely. That reminds me. I remember my cousin. Back in the old days, they liked to light those little black cats in their hands and throw them. And he ended up not throwing it fast enough, and he fell over off of a little terrace. And so that made it a very interesting Independence Day.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
These days, his parents would be brought up on charges, I think.
Yeah. That's right. Not in our jurisdiction.
Not back then. It's like, you learn. There's consequences.
That's right. Good. Molly, I had all these things that had been on my radar. And what's really on my radar is, you know, we talk about a couple of different things. One of them is reliable, affordable, and efficient energy. Yeah. And the other thing is the freedom of mobility, the freedom which is unique in America and particularly to the West, that we have our cars, we're able to go where we want to, when we want to. And there's all this talk about the sharing economy, you know, Uber, Lyft, you know, and all that's really great. However,
when it works.
Mm-hmm. So a little after one today, the electricity went off in my house. And I know that I have garage door challenges when that happens.
Now, you know not to take your hair dryer in the bathtub, Kimmy. Are you the one they put that sticker on for?
Definitely. Definitely. So anyway, I'm thinking, okay. So I called Xcel and the electricity was supposed to come on at 3:45. So I'm thinking, okay, that works great. I can get out the door. I can be here in front of the microphone in plenty of time. 3:45. No electricity. So I called Xcel again, and they said it would be coming on about 5:15, 5:30, which is not going to work for me to get here.
No.
So by that time, I called Molly. I said, where are you? She says, oh, I'm just about to the station. It's about 10 till 4. And she says, do you want me to come get you? And I'm thinking, well, let's make sure one person is in front of the microphone in case something happens.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm like, okay, I'll just call an Uber. So I go to my phone, and the Uber app wasn't working.
What?
Yeah, I know.
Reliable technology? Wasn't reliable?
Right? So then I signed up for Lyft, and I got to everything on Lyft except submit, and it wouldn't take that.
Huh.
So I'm now starting to whack a little bit.
There's a conspiracy here.
Yeah, there's a conspiracy.
Someone's trying to keep you off the air.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe that's what it is.
Does George Soros know where you live?
After the joke I told this weekend, maybe he does.
That's true.
So anyway, I thought, okay, so then I thought a taxi, although I'm not really in taxi area. So then I ended up calling neighbors, called my daughter-in-law. Nobody answered.
Good
by this
grief.
Time, I'm starting to whack. Maybe they knew I was needing something.
That's right.
Wouldn't the light rail get you here? Oh, no.
Not till after the show, that's for sure. So anyway, my neighbor, I got a hold of her. She comes over. We pop the door, and it's a really heavy door. We're trying to get it up. And it's just too heavy. We just can't do that. So, you know, finally she said, okay, I'll take you. And at that moment, the electricity came on.
What?
So I put the door back up.
Fantastic.
And then I got here at just a little bit before 5. But my point on this, George and Molly, is we don't realize how important reliable and efficient and affordable energy is.
Until
you don't have it. So no microwave. No hair dryer. Don't say anything about my hair. refrigeration. You know, if your battery runs out on your computer, you're done. I happen to have a battery pack for my phone. That was the only thing that really kept me going, which I had that charged up. So first of all, reliable energy allows us to live our lives and be prosperous and to thrive. The second thing is in theory, this whole sharing economy seems like it really works, except when it doesn't. And then, you know, people can't show up for work. They can't get where they need to go. So I think we need to rethink all this kind of pie in the sky stuff with whatever we're being sold on all that.
Yeah.
So that's what's on my radar.
Well, I agree. And what happens if you need an ambulance? You know, we had Tim Jackson, the head of Cicada in here, mm-hmm. and he said, you know, when they get to those autonomous cars and they're all over the road, you're going to be driving down the street and see there's cars with nobody in them, yeah. but they're taking up all the road and all the lanes. And what's going to happen when you need one or you need an ambulance, you know, or something like that?
I hadn't thought about the passengerless cars, like going from one place to another.
Right, yeah. right.
Interesting.
And then where do they park in the meantime? They're saying, oh, we'll send them out, like, you know, way out into no man's land because there aren't any new parking spaces.
Yeah.
Because Denver City Council isn't requiring new parking spaces for new buildings because they don't want cars.
So when you dial up a car, the car might be 40 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the other thing that he mentioned is regarding Uber is this will totally go against their model because this would now mean with driverless cars, they would have to buy their fleet. So I don't think people have totally thought about this whole thing. So we've got a little bit more to talk about before we really get into a conversation with George Brockler.
Yeah.
We will be right back. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim.
Boom.
If you're a veteran looking to purchase a home, choose the local experts at Home Mortgage Alliance. VA loans offer qualifying veterans the option to buy without a down payment, and closing fees are limited. Active duty or retired military, reserves, and surviving spouses may qualify. Kim Sturtz and Mark Cook have spent decades finding the correct loan to suit your unique financial situation. Give Home Mortgage Alliance a call at 303-888-2732. That's 303-888-2732. Or check them out on our AmeriChicks referral list at AmeriChicks.com.
Home Mortgage Alliance LLC is an approved FHA lender. Sponsored agent of VA loans. NMLS number 1137507.
When buying or selling your home, you need a top-notch negotiator with experience. Award-winning RE/MAX Alliance Realtor Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 25 years. Karen Levine is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Let Karen help you find the right home for your lifestyle. Call Karen at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation. That's 303-877-7516 or visit her online at Karen-Levine.com and tell her the AmeriChicks sent you.
Today you need to have a great online and social media presence, and the best in the biz is Desi On Demand. The AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, personally work with Brandon, the founder of Desi On Demand. Desi On Demand is instrumental with our video projects, Chick Chat, Exceptional Endeavors, and our World War II project. We most heartily endorse his creativity, innovation, dedication, and integrity. Brandon and his team bring all that to the table. Check out Desi On Demand's website at mydesi.com or call 303-359-1522 for more info, and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Bookkeeping, accounting, and taxes, oh my! No need to worry about your company or personal finances with the proven professionals at Predovich & Company. Predovich & Company are certified public accountants who offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predovich & Company strives to take a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs and situation. Give Predovich & Company a call at 303-791-3000 or check out their website at dpredovich.com and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back to the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, on Denver's Money Talk 1690 KDMT. We're with you every Monday to Friday, 5 to 6 p.m. on that slow ride home, so be sure to tune us in. So, Kimmy, before we went to break, you were talking about your terrible, terrible time of depending on the energy companies who weren't coming through for you today and trying to get that door open and making a case for reliable, affordable, attainable energy.
Yes.
Kind of important.
It is.
And also the case that you were calling for Ubers and trying to get Lyft and trying to get taxis and nothing was working. And so if we really go too far down that road of saying, let's give away our you know, independence and our ability to drive ourselves in our own cars, then that's not going to be very good for freedom in the future.
Right.
So we have George Brockler in studio with us. He is the district attorney of the 18th Judicial District. You know him very well from his James Holmes case. And also he's running for governor.
Yep, that's right.
Welcome.
Of Colorado.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. Just in case anyone was
Sunshine
like,
State,
are we
not
having an election on that? No, it's definitely Colorado.
I could say the Sunshine State because I think it's like 100 degrees today. But anyways,
I saw there's 23 people that's running for governor.
I've heard 23, not all Republicans or Democrats from this, that, or the other, and some independents, I imagine. And frankly, I don't think that list is set in stone either. I think there's probably going to be a couple few other people
I think so.
That jump into this race as well.
Okay.
Everybody thinks they can do a better job.
Hmm. Well, yeah.
Well, better to have people standing up to, yeah. to
oh,
actually
I don't
throw
disagree
their,
with that.
Their hat in. You know, that we have too many people that just say, you know what, I'm just going to vote and I'm not going to do anything else. And then they complain when things don't go their way and policies are passed that affect their lives and hurt their children. But they just complain and they don't come up with solutions. So I think.
Yeah, the other thing, too, that's good for each party, but the Republican Party, what we don't do is we don't just anoint someone. We don't look at someone and say, oh, you've got the pedigree.
Great point.
You've got the bank mm-hmm. account. We're all just going to step aside and push you into the general. And frankly, whenever we've tried to do that, short of, I think, Corey was probably the last successful example that we have. I'm thinking back in my lifetime. We're not good at that, right? We're the party of iron sharpens iron. And so I think there are some out there who look at this upcoming primary like, man, this is going to be costly. It's going to be bruising. I think it'll be bruising. I don't want it to be bloody. But this is how you vet candidates. This is how you get the best product on the field for your team and your viewpoint. And I don't think we ought to be disappointed or shy about that. If mm-hmm. people want to jump in this race, have at it. But mm-hmm. the idea that we're going to start telling other candidates, there's enough in there already. Maybe you ought to think about the future. Don't think about the future like, you know, the next election cycle. If you want to get in now. Let's have this debate over ideas and leadership right now.
I like it. So speaking of ideas, as we went into break, we were talking about reliable, affordable, and efficient energy. And you had a really interesting point regarding a couple of the guys that are running for governor.
Yeah, on the other side, on the Democrat side, it seems to be a race to the far left, which is who can issue a death sentence for fossil fuel the quickest. And so one of the candidates, Congressman Polis, has come out and declared that by 2040, we'll be at 100% renewable energy. Senator Michael Johnston, who's a state senator, has also declared the same thing. And what I appreciate about it is any politician who picks an end date to accomplish something after their political shelf life, that takes real courage, mm-hmm. right? To be yeah. able to say that, hey, 20 plus years from now when I'm long retired, maybe it won't have worked out, but it can't be held against me. What I'd rather see, what I think would take more guts for them is to say, we're going to get to 50% renewable energy by my first term in office. Now, I'm not saying that that's even doable or that it ought to be a goal. But if they got the guts to put their money where their mouth is, they'll pick something that they can be held accountable for failing to achieve by their first term. But that's not what your typical establishment politicians do. They pick something that they can't be held accountable mm-hmm. for. So I'm going to do it. By 2040, every Coloradan will be a billionaire. I'm just saying it
like
right
it.
There.
I like
it's going to happen. And if not, then in 2040, come tell me it didn't work out and we'll move on from there.
Well, hey, we get these government regulations rolled back and we get tax reform in place and
maybe
we get
true.
Obamacare repealed. We may all be millionaires,
yeah.
or at least have that opportunity to
right.
get pretty darn close because the government sets us free.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd love the independence piece. That would be nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So I wanted to give you all a couple winners of the week for me.
Okay,
I want to see what you
Molly,
think.
Molly, what are they?
Okay. So one, Project Veritas. Is my hero.
We've had him on a few times.
We've had him on a few times. Hopefully we'll get him on again soon. These guys are awesome. They go undercover. And when people are starting to share lies with you and trying to smoke and mirrors the people and trying to persuade us with these lies, they just blow that smoke out of the water and share what's going on. So already they've been going after CNN. And we've seen a few things last week, and there's something new today. So just as a reminder, last week they uncovered CNN saying that voters are stupid as you know what. And so they keep pushing these nothing burger Russian Trump collusion stories because we're so stupid that we won't know. And it helps their ratings. And then the last thing is just recently here, Jimmy Carr, again, is the same guy that got caught by Project Veritas undercover guy saying that Cuomo only has and he's only an anchor at CNN because his brother's the governor of New York, which is pretty cool. But then you see what Project Veritas did after that. They released a statement with a warning to all Main Street media. They said, if you are Main Street media and you are practicing deception or you're trying to lie to the people, you might want to sleep with one eye open because we're coming after you as well.
Wow. Wow. How scary.
Yeah.
It
the
media. Yeah.
They're going to vet their interns even more now.
Yeah.
This is true.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, George.
Yeah.
We've had Project Veritas on a couple of different times, Ross Verney, I think it is. And it's really, these young people that go undercover, they really have guts. I can't believe that they can do it, but they are pretty amazing.
Yeah, I wonder if this isn't just the future for all the media, right? Between open record stuff that continues, government continues to find a way to not comply with or to thwart, and the fact that we've moved away from the ABC, NBC, CBS model of media to almost anybody can be their own reporter if we're not going to just see more and more of these type plants in places that will reveal a truth that otherwise we wouldn't be entitled to.
Well, and I think we really do need to move the media back to what they're supposed to do in freedom of the press. And it's important to understand that there is opinion. And, you know, Molly and I give opinions. We base these on truth, but we give our viewpoint on it. We make no bones about it. It's our viewpoint. You can decide, agree, disagree, good idea, bad idea. But there's an honest dialogue about that. And the press, and we've talked about this on numerous occasions. I took journalism classes years ago, and there's ways that journalists can kind of skew the reporting of a story. So ideally, it could be, you know, a true press piece would say the president walked down the stairs of Air Force One.
Sure.
Okay, that's fact. Okay, but it could be the president bounded down the stairs of Air Force One with so much energy because he's so excited about blah, blah. Or the president lumbered down the stairs because he looks so tired and worn out. You know, and so that's what I think the American people have not realized, is that there's kind of all these words that are starting to cloud what real news is. And so I love the fact of what Project Veritas is doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I love it, too. And then another one is another group holding people accountable who've been lying and hiding. So this is yesterday when we were down at the Capitol talking at the event. I saw some anti-Antifa shirts. Have you guys heard of this group?
No.
No.
So at first I was like, oh, it's Antifa, which I've seen. And these are the guys that cover up their faces with the black masks and that kind of stuff, the handkerchiefs. And they're going to all of these conservative events and shouting people down. And they say they're anti-fascist. But the truth is they're anti-First Amendment if you don't agree with them or if you're for freedom and liberty.
Oh, I get it.
And so now this anti-Antifa group has just started. And their goal is to basically hold accountable and shed the light on and expose the hypocritical tactics of the Antifa guys, the people behind the mask, as anti-racist or civil rights, and pushing their corrupt agendas. So they're shedding the light on that.
These guys are coming out.
Gotta hide behind the mask. Why does CNN lie, you know, behind the lies?
The Twitter thing, too. There are the gutless people out there who hide behind their Twitter handles that aren't them so that they can, you know, say a bunch of crazy stuff and never be held accountable. It's a gutlessness, frankly. If you believe in what you believe in, stand up and say it.
Absolutely.
If you don't feel comfortable, then just sit at home.
Yeah. And George Brockle, like you said before, sword sharpens sword. We want to have honest intellectual debates.
Yeah, that's right.
People should be really digging for the truth and coming up with their solution and discussing that in a civil way with everybody else. That's how we do that in America. That's why America is so great.
I think so too. I think also, if you believe in something and you're never challenged on it, you may never have to ask yourself, how did I come to that conclusion? Like, why do I think that? Did I get that from mom and dad? And if so, what drove them to think that way too? If you never get challenged on your beliefs, you end up having a very shallow level of understanding that you can't then pass on to someone else's. Your vote still counts as much as anyone else's, but it'd be great if you could actually stand up and talk about why you believe in what you believe in without the name calling.
That's such a great point. As I was growing up, we were moving to this kind of relativism in America where every opinion was valid, every opinion deserved merit. And for many years, I've thought that, you know, respectfully, mm-hmm. you know, you have your opinion, I have my opinion. But then I've realized, George, that not every opinion is totally valid. You need to have a conversation about it.
Right.
And if somebody can't defend their premise or defend their mm-hmm. opinion two or three questions in, instead of going, we just agree to disagree, one should probably check their premises. And see, you know, if they don't have something to base that opinion on, maybe they might want to revisit that particular opinion.
Well, there's also the moral relativism piece, which grows out of this, which is the idea that you can believe something is right or wrong based on what we thought to be these immutable principles. And then over time, we're coached into thinking, you know, from an education system that nothing is absolutely right or absolutely wrong. For instance, theft is bad, but if you're stealing to get bread for your family, then it's not bad. And it's like, no, it's still theft. We may talk about what we do on the back end of that, how we treat someone who steals for that. But you can't get to the point where you say, well, in this circumstance, that right is a wrong or that wrong is a right. That's how we end up where we are today.
Yeah, rights aren't relative.
That is so interesting. I was with a group this last weekend that were starting to study the Federalist Papers.
Yeah.
And we're talking about right or wrong. So I put this question out there. I said, is it wrong to steal? Do we think that we would agree on that here in America?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then I said, you know, we interview so many different World War II vets that they stole eggs or they stole milk because they were starving and they needed to survive. So is that not stealing? And so somebody in the group said that there is a difference because that was in time of war and that falls under the Geneva Convention. But otherwise, stealing is stealing. So anyway, I thought that was really interesting.
Well, also, I think they paid them back because they were protecting these people's lives. So it really was like they paid for what they took.
That's a good point.
Right? Okay. Yeah. So one more winner of the week, and then I'm gonna go to George, because this kind of ties into some things that are on your website since you're running for governor, George Brockler.
That's one of
my favorites is Derek Carr. He's the quarterback for Raiders. And as a Raider hater, it pains me to tell you that I like this guy.
Yeah.
Believe me. But this guy, he just signed a 5-year, $125 million contract. And when they asked him, what are you going to buy with that? He said he's going to tithe, as he always has since college. I just think that's awesome.
Wow.
And he said he's glad this money is going to be in his hands because he's going to be giving, he knows it's going to go help a lot of people.
Dang it.
Wow. That is pretty amazing.
That's just so hard to hear from someone that you want to be adverse to because of the Raiders. Now I wish he was playing for us. Yeah, like I wanted him to say something like, cocaine and fast cars or something like that, where you could be like, of course.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So, three mansions, but tithing, come on.
Yeah.
Man, that's a great thing.
It's awesome. And his wife still cuts coupons. But so I was thinking about this. He's a leader.
Yep.
He's a good role model. He's the kind of person that we want our kids to look up to because he's doing these great things. George Brockler, you're running for governor, and one of the things that you said, the reason is because you feel like our state needs leadership.
Amen.
And so let's go to break. When we come back, we want to hear what you meant by that and what that looks like to you.
Sure.
Have a great night out and watch the best movies under the stars at the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. Beginning Friday, June 30th, the triple feature at 88 Drive-In will include Despicable Me 3, The Mummy, and Wonder Woman. Admission is $8 per person and children under 12 are free. Stay for one or all three. And be sure to visit their delicious snack bar to help 88 Drive-In Theater continue to bring you the best in movie entertainment. Get their special pizza deal Monday through Thursday. Receive one 12-inch pizza and two 16-ounce sodas, all for only $11. Stay up to date on movie showings and times at 88drivein.net and be sure to tell them the Americhicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back. We're the Americhicks, Molly and Kim on KDMT. And in studio with this is George Brockler. He is stepping up and running for governor because he thinks our state needs leadership, safety, security, rule of law, lots of awesome things. So thanks for joining us today, George.
Oh, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Really excited. Sure. Tell us what you mean by our state needs leadership, and how would you provide that?
Oh, listen, first off, if you've been in the state, this is the only state I've ever known as home, right? I'm just a middle-class kid from Lakewood who is trying to figure out whether or not we have a system that still permits someone with that background to rise to the highest level of state government. And you don't have to have been here for more than 5 or 10 years to see that we have kicked the can down the road on so many issues of importance to Coloradans, regardless of ideology, regardless of partisanship. Our roads suck. Right. We have done nothing under that gold dome in more than a decade to try to tackle this problem that we knew was coming. We know it's going to get worse if we don't do anything. And yet the latest thing we could come up with was, hey, if we all agree to raise sales taxes on ourselves,
21%.
And that was the negotiated thing. It started with 21%.
Exactly.
Then we'll be able to solve our woes. The educational system is failing us. I mean, depending upon where you live, you could have a graduation rate like Aurora, on-time graduation rate of 50%, Denver 65%.
It's heartbreaking.
The other heartbreaking thing is of those kids that graduate and go to college, 36% are going to have to spend money and time taking remedial classes to get caught up to where they should have been when they left our publicly funded high schools. That's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. That's also a lack of leadership. Mm-hmm. Rule of law stuff. And again, we've seen leadership from behind. We saw that model at the national level. I think at the state level, what we see is leadership from just hanging around the room. Like if the governor's office doesn't do enough, people will figure out solutions for themselves. And then you can come in and say, look what I've done. We saw that with this last session, too. The legislative session produced very little by way of transportation fixes until we got to 267. And you'll remember when that bill stalled, the governor tweets out, no gold stars yet. Keep working on it. We can get this done. That was the engagement of the governor's office in that debate. And that doesn't make any sense to me or Coloradans as well. What we need to have is someone who can say, we're going to prioritize this budget And we're going to put transportation at the top of that list. We're going to figure out a way to get rid of all the nonsensical stuff that keeps us from spending money wisely and on the things that people care about, like the core competencies of government. We're going to have someone that will stand up for the state of Colorado, regardless of who's in the White House, and fight for Coloradans first and not think about their party and ideology first. Here's another example. The rule of law stuff matters, right? Like, it's not just Colorado. We have seen it deteriorate across the country. And when you see a lack of respect for the law, you then begin to see a lack of respect for the law enforcers. Mm-hmm. And so along with that, you see an increased level of danger for law enforcement officers, harder to recruit into law enforcement. Right. But here's an example. People have asked me all around the state, what's your position on sanctuary cities and sanctuary states? And I'm opposed to them. And I'm opposed to them not because of anything to do with a perception of them versus us. It has nothing to do with that. What it has to do is who we are, right? We are a state and a nation of laws, not that are visited upon us by some royalty or, God willing, some administrative agency, but that we pass upon ourselves. And so we got three things that we can do with the laws that we have. And I'm talking about immigration laws and any others. We can enforce them and follow them. We can amend them to be something that's more reflective about how we feel today, or we can outright repeal them. But what we cannot do, what we must not do, is to pretend they don't exist or figure out a way to end run around them. And that's what we see with this movement towards sanctuary cities. It's sanctuary from laws, laws that we have the ability to change tomorrow if we have the collective will to do it. And if we don't have the will to do it, there's your answer, right? If there's not a need to change, there is a need not to change. And that's sort of what we get out of Congress for this particular set of immigration reform ideas. Everyone thinks it's got to be changed, but until it does, we don't just say, that's it, we disagree. The death penalty in the state of Colorado, by a 2-1, 3-1 margin, depending upon the polling, Coloradans are in favor of it. And yet we have a governor that on a couple different occasions has just said, look, I'm going to suspend the enforcement of the death penalty because I just disagree with it. That's not what you elect a governor for. And as governor, I will not substitute my judgment for the will of the people on laws that are in place. I'll either advocate against them to have them repealed or changed, or gosh darn it, we're going to enforce them.
Okay. Let's go to that. We told our listeners that we'd talk about some of these famous cases that you were involved with.
Yep.
George, we're talking with George Brockler. He's running for governor, and he is the district attorney for the 18th Judicial District.
True.
And this may be one of the most famous cases out there, is the Aurora Theater shooting. So tell us about that case.
Boy, it's hard to do that in under really 3 hours. There's so much to it. Everyone has some sense of the case. If you've been in this area at all, you've heard about this. It was a cold, evil, deliberate attempt to murder hundreds of human beings who were unsuspecting and incapable of protecting themselves inside a movie theater at about 2:25 in Alameda. And it was done over a 2.5 month period of planning by someone who had harbored hatred in his heart and in his mind since he was 10 or 11 years old about humanity. And he went out to go execute those people. This happened when I was just the nominee for DA. I hadn't even been elected.
Oh my gosh.
So it was 1 month after I became the nominee. And I knew that this would sort of change the scope of the perception of the office and maybe even me moving forward. And it was a sensitive case for the community. It had devastated that good community out there in Aurora. And so nothing about it was obvious to me. It didn't make sense to me that it was just there's 12 deceased. Automatically, it is a death penalty case, and I never treated it that way. It was months of looking at every possible angle, considering all the mitigation that the public defender's office was willing to provide to us, and they held some things back. I consulted with other DAs in the state who had capital punishment experience that I lacked. I spoke with a local priest, talked to my dad about it, who's the most Christ-like man I've ever met, talked to my wife about it, prayed on it, talked to all the victims about it, and there's no 100% on anything, right? You get 100 people that represent 12 deceased. You're not going to hear 100, yes, we're all for life or we're all for death. And at the end of the day, it just came down to the fact that, look, this law exists on the books. It's not my position to be the elected Roman Catholic DA of the 18th and say, well, my faith prevents me from pursuing this. That's not what people elected me for, and that's not how I ran. And I also thought, I am not going to reward this guy for how difficult it is to obtain the death penalty in the state of Colorado or to give in to what he wants. And this is where the Denver Post came in and said, you should have just given him what he asked for. Mm-hmm. You should just give this mass murderer the outcome he wanted, which would be to put him in the same position we put someone who walks up to someone on a street corner in Aurora and shoots him in the face over a corner, right? That doesn't make sense to me. That is not justice for the rest of those people out there serving life in prison for having killed one person. And so I thought, you know what justice is? Justice is the ultimate sanction for the ultimate crime, and that's what this was.
Mm-hmm. I think that makes a lot of sense. Dennis Prager is on one of our sister stations, and he said something about, we have these no hate zones in America now. And he said he does hate something. He said that he hates evil. And George, each of us can do different jobs. I could not have done the job that you did sitting down probably with the victims' families. Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
That had to be heart-wrenching to do that.
Yeah, it's tough. And those that, and again, his victims were represented by family members across the country. So the ones that we couldn't get in front of us before this decision was made, and I was on the phone with them constantly, we'd get on the phone with them. And sometimes they couldn't talk to us because of how sensitive it was. Sometimes it would have to be in a group setting with a bunch of family members. Sometimes there were husbands and wives disagreeing with each other on the phone about what they wanted to see happen. The things that they talked about ran the gamut. I thought, I pulled out my legal pad, I drew a little line down the middle and thought in favor of death and opposed to death. And I thought that's what the answers would be. It wasn't anything like that. I mean, sure, you got those traditional answers, but some were like, I want you to dismiss the case against this guy. And I'd say, well,
really?
Why would you want me to do that? They'd say, because the minute they cut him loose from the jail, I will be there to finish this.
Oh.
And I'm like, okay, is that a vote for life or is that a vote for death? I don't know how to mark that down. And other people who said, I want you to plead him guilty quickly because I think he'll be murdered more quickly by inmates in prison than he will be by this system. So, and I'm like, well, I don't know. Is that a vote for life? I don't know if that's a vote
for
life. And then other things.
I hadn't even thought about that.
People of sincere faith who would say, I've been opposed to capital punishment my whole life, and that doesn't change just because it's my son or it's my daughter. I mean, and I respect those positions, sure. You know? And others who said, man, I want to be there to put the needle in his arm. Mm. I mean, there is no one answer when you're confronted with something this horrible.
So ultimately, how did you make that decision, George?
All those things that we went through, and at the end of the day, I thought, nope, justice demands us doing something more than just wink, wink, nudge, nudge, send you off to prison for the rest of your life. And frankly, the public and the victims would not have known as much about the details of that case had we just pleaded away and shuffled him away as they do now. In fact, to a person, those family members came to me over the course of the trial and would pull me aside, even the ones that were adamantly opposed to seeking death, and say, I get it. I get it now. And while I don't support death for this, thank you for doing this trial. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to know about the guy that killed our son or our daughter. Thank you for letting us know about their last moments, who they were with, all that mental health nonsense that the public defenders threw up there that we ended up having to spend a ton of money to defend against. All of that stuff would have just been a question in their mind. And the public would have gone away feeling like, well, this guy's crazy. He ain't crazy. He was absolutely sane. And everybody except the hired guns from the public defender's office said so.
Wow. Well, we are talking with George Brockler about the Aurora Theater shooting case. And George is also running for governor. So this is a fascinating interview. We're going to go to break. When we come right back, it's Molly and Kim with George Brockler.
In a world of uncertainty, anything can happen. It pays to protect yourself, your family, your business, your home, and your car. And it pays to work with the proven professionals at Alliance Insurance Services. Jeremy McCallum and his Alliance Insurance Services team work with a variety of insurance companies competing for your business. Jeremy and the Alliance Insurance Services team helps you find the right insurance at the right price. They know you'll sleep better at night knowing Alliance Insurance Services is handling all of your insurance needs. Give them a call today at 303-431-9351. That's 303-431-9351. And be sure to tell them the AmeriChick sent you.
Freedom begins in your house, not the White House. We Americans enjoy the privileges of a free society, and each of us has a duty and responsibility to keep America's unique ideals of freedom on course. How? Lens of Liberty can help. Lens of Liberty's Free Freedom Kit provides a complete guide to help you be informed, stay vigilant, and fight back for liberty. Order your Free Freedom Kit from lensofliberty.org now. That's lensofliberty.org, so you are armed with the tools necessary to stand for America's ideals.
Hey, welcome back. We are the AmeriChicks, Molly Vogt and Kim Munson. We are here with George Brockler. He is the district attorney for the 18th Judicial District, as well as he is running for governor. Just a really fascinating segment regarding this whole case on the Aurora shooter, the theater shooter.
James Holmes.
James Holmes. And You know, talk just, is there anything else that you'd like to kind of button up that whole conversation with, George?
No, just that I pledged during the pendency of this case when, you know, all the pressure from the left and from the media was just make it go away, just, you know, let this guy have what he wants. And I pledged, look, I'll go anywhere and answer questions to anyone in the public. I have spoken all over the state to Rotary clubs, Kiwanis. I've been to retirement communities. I've been to Republican, Democrats. I just want anybody who is certainly in this jurisdiction, but a taxpayer, ask questions about why we did what we did. And no person in this case has been more transparent than we have. I still on the website, if you go to our website, have every single penny we spent on that case and where it went to. You don't get to hear that from the courts or from the public defender's
That's
office.
That's really great. That's great.
Well, George Barkle, I want to ask you about another case.
Yep.
Because the rule of law is very, very important to myself and to Kim as well. And we want to make sure that our next governor understands the rule of law. And tell me what you think about Nathan Dunlap and Governor Hickenlooper granting him temporary reprieve from the death penalty.
Yeah, I was appalled at that. You know, unsuspecting, again, I get elected, I get sworn in. All of a sudden, after 17 years of post-conviction appellate review, the United States Supreme Court comes back, rejects this final flailing effort by this mass murderer to save his own life, and it comes back to the governor's office, and the governor's office talks to victims, and it talks to the defense attorneys, and it talks to prosecutors, and ultimately, and my hat's off to the governor for this, decides he'll allow me to meet with him one-on-one because I couldn't make one of the other meetings. And at the end of the day, he doesn't make a decision to commute his sentence to life. He doesn't make a decision to let it move forward. And make no mistake, and I've heard the governor say this, that he was going to have to sign some piece of paper early on. That's not how Colorado works. The governor has to do nothing. If he had taken a giant nap, this thing would have been carried out because it was an order from the judge empowering that jury's sentence. Instead, he intervened. He injected himself into this process using this little known power in the Colorado Constitution called the power of reprieve. Now, it hadn't been used since 1895. And it was intended to be a temporary suspension of the enforcement of a sentence. And you can imagine why, right? Like on the way to the gallows, someone comes forward and says, hey, I was a witness to this. He didn't do it. And you'd be like, hang on, let's at least check that out before the guy goes to meet his maker,
sure.
Right? That's why you have a reprieve.
Valid
and
point.
I'm not saying to get rid of it. First time ever it has been used as an individual moratorium on a law. And if you read the governor's executive order, he says, I'm not doing this because I believe Nathan Dunlap should be spared. He says, I disagree with the death penalty. This is not about Nathan Dunlap. This is about the death penalty. And the only reason it feels like it's just about Dunlap is because that's the only case we had in the pipeline. But if you read that order, it is a moratorium on the enforcement of the death penalty in the state of Colorado as long as that guy's in office. He didn't have the guts to say, nope, I'm opposed to it. I'm going to commute the sentence. He says, I'm going to kick this thing down the road and allow the next governor to make that decision. I'm not convinced he'll do it. I think leaving office, he's going to quickly stroke his name across a piece of paper and spare this guy's life, who doesn't deserve it, by the way. But if he happens to leave it for the next governor, I've earned my way to that position, I am going to breathe life back into that jury's verdict. Those were 12 good people that his attorneys helped pick 17, now 20 years ago. They sat down and considered every piece of evidence, every argument, and their conclusion was unanimously, this guy deserves to die for what he did. And it is not the position of a governor 20 years removed to go, yeah, I disagree. Wow. You're not a super juror. You're the governor.
Wow.
You're not the king.
That's right. That's right.
That is fascinating. So are there any other cases you'd like to talk about, or should we talk some more about ideas?
Or about
your issues? Ideas. Let's do ideas. Yeah.
Okay, George, you've got, well, you know, one thing we haven't even talked about, though, is the fact that you're a colonel in the Colorado
That's
Army
right.
National Guard.
That's right.
And you served in Iraq with the 4th Infantry.
I did, 4th okay. Infantry Division, yeah, out
okay.
in Tikrit. Mm-hmm.
So tell us a little bit about that experience.
You know, honestly, I feel like I have gotten off light. I mean, I have friends that have never been called, but I have an equal number, maybe a greater number of friends who have deployed multiple times to Afghanistan and Iraq, and most of them are on active duty, but some are not. And I see the toll it takes on them and on their families, and I feel like I've been spared. Like, I've only been mobilized twice since guys flew these planes into these buildings, and I to this day, I feel like there's this itch that still needs to be scratched. Like, Uncle Sam could reach out tomorrow and say, hey, Colonel, we got a place for you. We want to send you downrange to do something. And there'd be apprehension, I mean, mostly for my family, but almost a sense of relief, too. Like, I owe so much to this country, and I don't know. I feel like I could be asked to do so much more and give so much more, and I haven't been. And so I carry around a little bit of guilt about that. But, you know, any chance you get to serve in uniform is a good thing. It's an honorable thing. But when you get deployed and you get to see some of the best and the brightest of America, and they're not Ivy League kids necessarily. Mm-hmm. These are kids who made a decision after high school for a lot of different reasons. I'm going to go do something that's bigger than me. I'm going to put my hand up in the air and risk my entire future for something that I can't control and I can't say no to, because that's how much I love this country and I believe in it. And you start seeing those men and women. I got 24-year-old sergeants working for me out there. This is their third deployment. Yeah. I'm like 24 years old and married with kids. And I think to myself, man, what kind of country are we? We have an all-volunteer service, and yet we have no trouble finding people to come forward and say, I love it. I love it so much. I'm willing to risk my entire future for this place. It's an honor to serve.
Yeah. Well, George Brockler, I agree. But, you know, I was kind of getting concerned over the past several years that the way President Obama was handcuffing our military, really, their hands behind their back and making them drop pamphlets before they go after ISIS. I mean, he was setting us up to lose and putting our guys in dangerous situations without a strategy to win. Now I feel like President Trump actually respects our military again. I like that. I like that he's surrounding himself with smart generals that are experienced. If you could sit down right now with Congress and President Trump, what advice would you give them, given your background in the military?
Oh boy, I'm not sure.
What we see today,
I'm not sure I'm smart enough to give them advice on that stuff. Man, I'm just a colonel. There are guys out there who know a lot bigger, 30,000 foot level stuff that have stars on them. But what I'd say is, let's not treat the military like some sort of a social test place for other ideas about what we want to see in society. Let's focus on the idea that we need the best and the brightest men and women to be trained, to be the smartest out there on the battlefield, the best equipped, and then cut them and their leaders loose to execute a mission that they can understand and act on. I think the more we give ambiguity to the instructions and orders that we give the military, the more you see them getting into trouble, because they begin to second guess themselves. And if you second guess yourself out there, people get hurt.
Right.
Sometimes it's us, sometimes it's civilians, but we get hurt. And I think that we could execute a much better plan with much more clear guidance than this. And I should say this too, I'm 100% committed to the idea of civilian control of the military. Don't get me wrong there. But at some level, you've got to start trusting some of the people that have been career military people to put you in a position to make good decisions. And you can't let your ideology step between them and you in terms of what to do on behalf of these people in uniform.
Well, you got to work together.
That's right.
And for somebody that doesn't have military experience, I think you certainly need to lean on these guys like General Mattis and, you know, for these particular decisions. And, you know, George, as, you know, a wife, a mom, all that, you think about young people. Molly and I have done, you know, our World War II project, young people that go out and stand up for our country. We need to make sure that we give them the tools and the freedom to be able to do their jobs properly. And I don't think there's any reason we should not put any of our soldiers in harm's way if we are not going to make sure that we back them and that we give them the tools and the resources and the freedom to do what they need to do.
I agree. I also don't want to see them used to advance a political cause.
Right.
Or even a geopolitical cause. I want to see them act out on the best interests of the United States of America and their allies. And beyond that, we're misusing them.
I agree.
So, George Brockler, one more question. We've only got a couple of minutes.
Dang it.
So, voters out there, women have shown in the past couple of elections that they are willing to split their vote, sometimes vote Republican, sometimes vote Democrat, depending on that particular candidate and that office. You saw Cory Gardner get votes and Governor Hickenlooper at the same time. What would you say to the women who voted for Clinton? Why should they vote for you for governor?
Listen, here's what I can tell you is you look at everybody on both sides of the aisle here that are running for this office, and I feel a pretty unique void, right? One, I'm not a rich guy, and there are millionaires on both sides of this. I am not a career politician. I don't have a network of statewide people out there ready to do stuff for me. I'm not a congressman of decade with that network of fundraising. I'm a guy who is married to an entrepreneur who is affected by all of the regulations that are choking out initiative and risk-taking in the small business world. I want my daughter and my wife to continue to want to thrive in this in any industry and be able to do it. I also have four kids at home, 14, 12, 9, and 7. I'm not some politician who's like, well, you know, all my kids are grown up now and they've moved on, or all my kids are in private school. All four of my kids are going to public school, just like mom and dad did. So when I talk to you about the issues that are important to me, I have a very selfish interest in these too, because they affect everything in my house right now. So if you're looking for someone that wants to have a safe community because his kids ride their bikes in this community, that's the guy you're listening to right now. If you want someone who believes in empowering his wife and his daughter, and I should give you fair warning, my daughter will take over the world. It's going to happen. If you hear the name Amanda Brockler, pay attention, because okay. It's going to happen. But, you know, her class voted her twice in middle school and in grade school, most likely to be president of the United States. You know what that does to a dad? I mean, my heart swells that she's already sort of showing those sort of leadership traits. If you're looking for someone who believes in his community and his neighborhood more than he does in the politics or the ideology, who wants to see Colorado be the state it could be, it should be, and my God, more like the state that I inherited from my parents than the one I'm about to give my kids, then this is the guy that you're listening to right here. This is the guy that wants to get your vote and take Colorado back for regular Coloradans.
And how can people get more information about you, George?
Come to my house. No, please don't come to my house. Please don't come to my house. And I'm not supposed to say that. It makes me sound old. George2018.com. George2018.com. You can go there, find information, reach out to us. We've had hundreds of volunteers. You can donate there if you find money in your couch cushion, or you find mommy's purse and you can get in there and figure out how to use the credit card. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. But they can do that.
Okay. So we wouldn't have you as a district attorney then bring those little kids up on charges or anything, would you?
No. If you're under 11, we're not able to prosecute you. Okay. Just saying, if you're a fourth grader out there and you're ambitious, no, I'm kidding. I'm joking.
Well, George Brockler, it's really, the time has gone by very quickly. It's really great to have you in
Thank
studio.
You.
Any last thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners?
No, I think Colorado's best days are in front of it, and I think we have a real opportunity here. And I hope it's me, but whether it's me or someone else, to really change the direction of Colorado from becoming more like California and to be more like that mile-high city we had to come uphill to move to, you know, that state where it's harder to breathe and the sun beats down on you harder, but my goodness, we're willing to trade it all for liberty and the beauty of this place.
Right. It's really a pioneering spirit. And so we asked you who one of your favorite guys is. You said Edmund Burke. So we've chosen this quote by Edmund Burke. He says, "But what is liberty without wisdom and without a virtue? It is the greatest of all possible evils, for it is folly, vice, and madness without tuition or restraint." So that's Edmund Burke. Molly.
Awesome.
Awesome. And tomorrow we are going to have Pastor Christine Coleman on with us. As you may remember, she was one of the few survivors of the Rwanda Holocaust. So she's an amazing woman. It's a great story you're going to want to hear. So definitely tune into the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim, tomorrow, 5 to 6 p.m. And y'all have a good night.